Hi, everyone, and welcome to our second SharePoint Tuesday event. My name is Andrea Mitnick, and I'm going to be acting as your moderator today. We have two very special SharePoint consultant guests with us, Todd Quint and Shane Young, both of whom are SharePoint experts. And Todd, who has been, he says, a computer nerd for about 15 years, has been specializing in SharePoint for the last six. He is coming to us today having presented at multiple sessions on SharePoint at major conferences in the U.S. as well as Europe, and he also has attended some SharePoint Saturday events, which hopefully some of you are able to check out. His latest book, Professional SharePoint 2010 Administration, is now available, so if you're looking for any more extra resources, be sure to check out that book. And he says he's currently working at his dream job. Oh, thanks, me too. Here at Rackspace as a SharePoint 911 consultant. So today we welcome Todd, and we also welcome Shane Young, who has over 15 years experience using Microsoft technologies. And for the past 7 years, he's been working with SharePoint technologies. So we have two amazing experts here with a lot of experience under their belt. He has created SharePoint solutions for clients ranging from 20 to 50,000 users, and he's also a renowned speaker, so you might have seen him at some point in time. He's also an author, so again, more resources for you to check out. Both are training courses that he's developed, one in 2007 and one in 2010, and if you want more information on either of them, we have their contact information to share with you, and Twitter information, blogs, all that good stuff. So I'm going to welcome Todd and Shane today. And if you guys have any questions as participants and audience members, please get those ready and type those into your chat box, and we'll get through them as they come.
All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Andrea, for that lovely introduction.
Yes, that almost makes us sound credible.
Yeah, she's been working on it for a few weeks, I think. So, you know, those of you that are out there in presentation land, really the idea of today is that Todd and I were going to just do Q&A type stuff, really. So over on the on your ReadyTalk screen, you have the ability to do chat. And so if you go into that chat and put in your different questions, Todd and I will certainly make fun of you for asking questions, and then more than likely answer your question as well.
Yeah, somewhere hidden in there will be the answer to your question. And, you know, questions like, Todd, couldn't you find somebody better to present with, things like that, those are all valid questions. So certainly throw those out there. They can be SharePoint related. They don't have to be.
All right, and I think we're going to throw a quick little poll up as well as you got one of you guys are putting out your questions. So just kind of give us a better idea of what is your focus with SharePoint. So, you know, what does the different information worker, developer, administrator, and user, what category do you fall into?
We've got one end user.
Yeah, just one end user. So it's me, you, Andrea, and one end user. It's a packed house.
Well, and we've got Kim in the chat, too. So she does, yeah, okay. Yeah. We've got Sissy, she's administrator. Good.
There we go. Well, and Kim's my good buddy from Columbus. I haven't seen her in a while, but Kim's a plant, so if she throws me softballs, you know why.
Yeah, well, Chuck is my plant, Chuck LaRue, so he's my plant. He listens to my netcast and all that, so unfortunately he knows things, you know, he knows what areas I'm weak in, so he'll probably ask those kind of questions to throw me off.
Gotcha.
All right, so we've got some more architects and admins. Good, those are my people. I'll notice that we haven't had any developers own up.
Yeah, I can't imagine why we wouldn't have developers. Is that maybe because we're very mean towards developers?
That comes up. So we have our first honest-to-goodness SharePoint question. So Jim asks, does SharePoint for Internet sites require SQL Enterprise, or can you use SQL Standard? So, Shane, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do not believe you need SQL Enterprise, but I will go on the record as saying that I know almost nothing about licensing.
So I will tell you that while Todd knows nothing, that he got this one right. There is a
yes.
SharePoint. None of the versions of SharePoint, from a SharePoint point of view, care what version of SQL Server that you're using. What you'll see is that there are some additional features you can introduce if you bring in either higher SKUs of SQL. Like, for example, if you introduce SQL Enterprise, you can take advantage of SQL Snapshots. So there are some things like that, but that doesn't change how SharePoint fundamentally works. So SharePoint itself will use any of the versions you want. The same thing, the other time that SQL Enterprise will come up from time to time is if you want to deploy, if you're using SharePoint Server 2010 Enterprise and you want to use Power Pivot, the Power Pivot functionality only comes from SQL Enterprise.
Yeah, there are a few of the crazy BI things. So like Shane said, base SharePoint stuff works fine, even with SQL Express. But if you want to do fancy disaster recovery stuff, you know, automatic failover mirroring, that kind of stuff, you need Enterprise. And then some of the BI stuff requires Enterprise. But as with any licensing question, never trust what anybody tells you, unless it comes from Microsoft, because that's all very fluid. So if you've got a Microsoft TAM or a salesman or something, they are the end. You know, they're the real world answer. It doesn't matter what Shane or I say.
All right, and Jim, thank you for your question. And definitely those of you that are joining in here just now, feel free to put your questions out there in the chat. The whole deal is Todd and I will try and answer those. And you know, if you don't put enough questions out there, then I'm gonna start telling you stories about Todd's childhood. And it's just really not fun for anyone. So.
I sob really loud. It's kind of distracting. So I'm going to grab one. So Kim's asking, we're looking at implementing an information protection program. Can you encrypt the SQL database and or the sites and or items such as folders in a site? So there's a lot of ands and ors in there, Kim. I might be confused. The answer might be blue, but I forgot. So you can do some information protection things on the SQL side. The general thing is, again, SQL Enterprise, I believe, is required, but SQL supports this thing called Transparent Database Encryption, or TDE, and SharePoint 100% supports that. And when you enable TDE on your SQL instance, your database is encrypted, its log files are encrypted, your master database and its log files are encrypted, and then the transactions that are in RAM are encrypted. So that protects at a database level things. Outside of that, there's really no out-of-the-box way to encrypt lists, libraries, or any of that kind of stuff. And so she follows up and says that it requires Enterprise. I believe it requires Enterprise SQL. It does not require Enterprise SharePoint. As far as SharePoint's concerned, nothing's changed. It doesn't know that TDE is going on in the background. It's completely transparent, hence transparent database encryption. I don't remember if standard SQL supports TDE or if you need the Enterprise SKU for that.
Yeah, and to take it one step further, Kim has SharePoint Foundation, if she's talking about the farm, I think she is. And so that would also be the same story in SharePoint Foundation because, like Todd said, SharePoint doesn't know that it's happening on the SQL server underneath.
Yeah. Yep. So that transparent database encryption will protect backups, because backups are automatically encrypted. So if what happens to you happens to seemingly every company that has my social security number, in that their databases, their tapes get lost, FedEx, or they fall off the back of the truck or something, those backups are all encrypted. And then if anybody just comes into your data center, pulls the drives out, all the MDF and LDF files are encrypted on disk. So that's probably a good thing. Now, there's a performance hit for that. It depends on who you ask and what kind of hardware you've got. But certainly if you're going to do TDE, do database encryption, you're going to want to test that in a test environment and find some way to measure performance to see what that hit is like, because there is some hit.
And I was trying to quickly find you the licensing information. I'm with Todd. I'm pretty certain it requires SQL Enterprise, but I can't find Microsoft telling me that.
Yeah. I can Pranit had a question I can answer while you're stalling, if you want.
Okay.
in reality, Shane's really deep into a big game of Spider Solitaire, and he's kind of on the final throes of it, and he wants some time to finish that up.
It's that new game I've been playing, Wordament, on my Windows Phone. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So Pranit asks, how is cloud services Office 365 going to affect administration work? This comes up a lot. So I think the answer depends a lot on what kind of cloud or hosting stuff you're talking about. So cloud is a pretty nebulous marketing term that doesn't really mean much of anything other than just hosted stuff. So, I mean, this has been going on for years now. So the impact that it has on administration work varies depending on how much you're having hosting. So, I can really only speak intelligently or near intelligently to the things that Rackspace offers. And so Rackspace offers things that are highly hosted, so all you have is end-user interface stuff, so SharePoint Designer and Explorer and that kind of stuff. And in that case, there's really not much for an administrator to do because it's just all handled by us. So you just do the SharePoint-y stuff, the end-user stuff, the business-user stuff, but you're not worrying about backups or any of that kind of stuff. And I think the Office 365 experience is going to be similar to that, though there's a little more to that. I know there's PowerShell that you can use with Office 365 and all that. But another option for hosting is having this whole idea of infrastructure as a service. And so that is a case where, like, Rackspace has just VMs. And so you can just get a VM that Rackspace hosts, and they manage the power and the network and all that kind of stuff, and you RDP in and do whatever with it. So if you're using something like that, then you still have all the same administrative work you would if the server was local. You still install SharePoint and patch it and back it up and all that kind of stuff. So again, it just depends on what you're hosting in the cloud and how you want it. I know when I have customers asking me about hosting, I tell them for the most part with us, you can have as much or as little as you want. It just depends on what you want to do. We've got packages for all of it. So he follows up, in terms of compliance like SOX, can the content be in the cloud? I honestly don't know. And then he says specifically for banks. I don't know, but I know I would be very worried about that if it were my bank. But
yeah,
I don't
a lot
know
of those just, scenarios, when they have that type of data, they do kind of a split scenario, right, where the things that the portions that don't have to be protected in that type of level of compliance, you might live on cloud storage, and then the stuff that they have compliance needs around, they'll put on an internal storage. I've seen some stuff like that, maybe not specifically with SharePoint, but in other cloud technologies.
Yeah, that is something that I know Rackspace does, is that whole split thing where some's internal, some's external, because that ends up being important for things like BI, because the SharePoint might be hosted, but the data that SharePoint's trying to report on might have to stay internal. So there's things like that. But again, it just comes down to when I talk to people about hosting, I talk to them more. I say, what do you want to do as opposed to what can we do? You design your perfect thing with the tasks that you want to do and what you want us to do, and then we'll work from there.
Yep. And so on the SQL stuff, I still can't find a definitive answer, but I am, from my reading, I am even more certain that it is only enterprise. So I can't find the link to show you that.
Yes. Now, if you want to steal Shane's position as my sidekick, you can go out and find this for sure and prove him wrong, and then I'll fire him and hire you instead.
That's so mean.
Being my sidekick is a very very prestigious position.
Thankless so. Job. All right.
Yep.
What other questions do we have, my friends out there in internet land? I see you all hovering, but I don't really see the attack, the onslaught. But, we'll get to the end of the hour. Everyone will pipe up all of a sudden in. So,
then,
I guess we work on our musical prowess. Todd, you've been part of that little quartet lately. You want to sing us a little something?
Which quartet?
The barbershop one, of course. You're from Ames, Iowa.
Well, so the thing is, I don't actually sing. I just like to dress up in the barbershop quartet clothes and walk around. So people get the wrong idea.
Including the funny mustache?
Yeah, and the hat. Very, very stylish. The ladies dig the hat. That's just no other way to talk about it.
Gotcha.
So while
do either of you want to talk about how you became an MVP or how long you have been working with SharePoint to give some of the new people who have joined us a little bit of a background?
Sure.
Yeah, tell us. James, tell us how you got here.
How I got here? So like most folks that I've met that are SharePoint administrators, I was a something else administrator first. So I was like a Windows administrator, an Exchange administrator, that kind of stuff. And I had been going to, you know, tech eds and all that kind of stuff and had seen the stuff about this beta product called Tahoe that was going to come out, and everybody was all very excited, and it didn't really make a lot of sense to me at the time. But then shortly after that, and my boss had been at that same tech ed, and so shortly after that, my boss wanted me to put together a website that had information about the equipment that we had, servers and when the warranties expired and all that kind of stuff. And we had people all over the country, so we wanted to have it a website of some sort because file shares didn't work very well. And unfortunately, as you've all picked up on by now, I'm really not terribly smart. I can't design things. I can't match colors and fonts and all that kind of stuff. And I can't program. So my first run at a web page was just like a text file that had all this stuff in it. But I remembered on the Office XP CD there was this SharePoint Team Services thing. So I dropped it in my CD drive and installed that. And that ended up being our internal IT equipment website, because all I had to do was input the data. I didn't have to worry about the development and the design and the authentication, all that stuff. It just worked. And then when SharePoint 2003 came out, that started when SharePoint started becoming a big deal. Our company decided they wanted a SharePoint site, and my boss said, I know just the guy. I've got a SharePoint expert. And so that's kind of how I got involved. So, and then just kind of grew, and it became a lot of fun, and here I am.
Very nice. Well, since I'm enjoying interviewing you, and I haven't asked you this question yet lately, where are we at with patches in SharePoint? What are you currently telling people who are like, hey, I want to stand up SharePoint? What should they be doing with patches? And what if they already have SharePoint? Where should they be?
Yeah, so patches, when I talk about patches, I consider that like an all-encompassing phrase that includes service packs, cumulative updates, or CUs. And then there's kind of a third quiet sibling in that family called the critical on-demand patches. And those are the, oh, my goodness, SharePoint has a terrible security hole that if you put a parameter that says Todd is cool, it opens everything up for you, something like that. My guidance is always, for all of SharePoint, as soon as is reasonable and responsible, you should put service packs out. Those are kind of big deals. They're tested a lot, and they're good stuff. So, you know, Service Pack 1 came out last June. You should all be at Service Pack 1 by now. And, of course, before you put it in production, you should put it in test, run it for a month or so, have your business folks check their things, check their workflows, check any custom software they're using, and get that going. And then get that Service Pack rolled out to production as quickly as you can while doing it responsibly. That's Service Packs. The next child in the patch family is the cumulative updates. The cumulative updates come out at the end, usually, of the even-numbered months. So this month is May. There will not be a cumulative update because it's the fifth month. The last one came out in April. And these are back in the old days, back before the Internet, when all of our computers were steam-powered. When we found bugs, you know, with NT 4.0, we would call Microsoft and we would explain the bug and we would work with them and they'd say, oh, yeah, we have this hot fix for you. Here you go. So the cumulative updates have replaced that process. And subsequently, they're not tested real well. They're just kind of rolled up every couple of months. My guidance on those is that you shouldn't put a cumulative update on unless it directly fixes a problem that you're having. So you shouldn't put the cumulative update on just because it came out, but it should, you know, you should have some lingering issue with SharePoint. You're like, oh, thank God, you know, the February patch fixes it, where Shane's picture is always upside down. Thank goodness we can fix that. The cumulative updates aren't tested very well, and so most of the cumulative updates have had broken things in them. And so you want to make sure that the reward makes the risk worth it. And again, you want to do that in a test environment first, make sure everything works. Because we've had customers, so the user profile service in SharePoint 2010 has been a particularly prickly beast, and every cumulative update has added something, you know, important for that. And we had a customer who was experiencing one issue with user profile service that was fixed in a patch. And so they didn't have a test environment. We just had to load it. And while it did fix the one problem they had, it created an even worse problem. And there is no such thing as uninstalling a patch. So they were just stuck till the next cumulative update came out, which fixed the second problem. So
they could have formatted their farm. I mean, that would have fixed it.
They could have. So they could have formatted their farm and restored their databases from before the patch. Yeah, that would have worked too. But nobody ever wants to do that. I offer that option all the time. Nobody ever takes me up on that. They never.
People are slackers.
But that's the thing. So then the last one is the critical on-demand patches. And as far as I know, there's only been one of those for SharePoint 2010. And that came out like in December timeframe-ish, January. And that one just slid in with Windows updates. And so that was just, you know, whether you meant to or not, that went in there. That patch didn't really have any problems that I know of. But after every patch, you have to run the configuration wizard to kind of finalize everything, seal it all up. And since that critical on-demand patch got installed without people doing it, they didn't know they had to run the configuration wizard, which has caused some goofy things. Then they tried to install the next patch, and it says it can't. And so that was that. But that's a good time. So keeping track of these patches and what they fix and what they break and all that can be kind of tough. So I put out a good blog post that's got all that I've been keeping up to date. And if you go out to my blog,
todgwin.com/blog,
it took me 22 minutes to quote my blog. That's a record. That is absolutely a record.
So here's what's really worse about that. Hopefully everyone can see my screen, but so I actually was pulling up the slide as a good sidekick would. And can everybody see the updates slide here?
Oh, attaboy, yeah. So that's the URL I was going to...
There's Todd's blog post on build numbers, and we'll take a look at that in just one second. And then you'll also see up here I give this official fancy Microsoft location, but it's hard to read. So unfortunately, I have to let you go to Todd's.
Yeah, and so the problem with that Microsoft one is, number one, they just list like whatever the latest patch is, and they seem to list it about 3 weeks after it came out, and there's no information other than just here's a link to the patch, which is kind of rough. But that blog post of mine, that toddglenn.com/sp2010builds, has a list of every build number in order, what, you know, when it came out, February 2011 CU, so on and so forth, links to the knowledge base article, links to the download for the patch. And then I started last year with another link that has the known things that are broken, so the regressions and the notes and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of been a good place. Every time I find something that's wrong with a patch, I put it in there. So if you're ever wondering about a patch and whether it breaks anything, you can certainly find out the bugs that I know about by going to that particular page. And I'm going to put that in the chat room right now.
Oh, so Todd, you messed it up. I had your web page up for everyone so you could walk them through how to find it.
Oh, well, bring that back up.
Oh, now you want it back. I see how you are.
For goodness sakes, I need the hits. Bring that up. My mom can only go to my blog so many times.
You want to walk through?
It says window not shared.
It says my window's not shared?
That's what it says. That's what it says to me.
How about now?
There we go. Okay, so first, when you go to my blog, it's a good idea to just take a look at my handsome face and just, you know. But then up at the top in the global nav affair, there we go. And right now you can't tell, but with his mouse, Shane's trying to draw a mustache on me. But, yeah, click that SP2010 builds or that SharePoint 2010 builds up there. And that is everyone. And then at the top, and it's kind of funny because if you read the comments, people are like, this is great. How do I find out what build number I'm at? That's all cleverly hidden in the words at the top of the blog post. So you can find out there, and then you just match the build up. Another thing that I did was I had a customer ask me how they keep up to date with this. And I'm like, well, you know, they come out at the end of every even month, so you can, you know, come to my blog every 60 days. That's one way of doing it. But then I also created a Twitter account, which is, there's a link at the top of that. And if you follow that account on Twitter, I will only ever tweet patch related things. So I will only ever tweet when a new patch comes out, which again is at the end of every even month, when I add a regression to a patch, something like that. Those are the only tweets. You'll never have to hear about what socks I'm wearing, what I had for lunch, that kind of stuff.
Is that on the FP2010 Puddles Twitter account then?
Yes. So for those of you that haven't heard Shane and I speak, Shane has made it this imaginary world where I spill coffee on myself all the time, and he calls me Puddles. It's adorable.
Well, Patches is one of the pound puppies. Puddles is another one. I just thought there was a theme here.
Patches and Puddles. But that's a big thing. So we had a couple of questions in the chat room about that.
Oh, well, then I'll quit sharing stuff.
Nope.
There you go.
Nope. You're fine. So Pranit asks, does it make sense to wait 3 to 6 months before performing an update? It all depends. I think 3 to 6 months is kind of long. But again, for service packs, you know, when it comes out, get your test environment ready, get some production data in there, and get that thing on soon, because that's going to be a big deal, those service packs. For cumulative updates, you know, subscribe to the Twitter list, do whatever. When the next cumulative update comes out, if you've got a problem with SharePoint, you know, something's broken, then look through the list and see if that's fixed. And if it's fixed, then throw it in your test environment, test it. But I would wait. I mean, in reality, for a production environment, waiting a month on a cumulative update's pretty good idea. You don't want to jump right in, because some of these problems take, you know, a couple of weeks to show up, and you don't want to be the guy that discovers it. Big, you know, big cred on the internet, and I'll give you a link on my blog, and you'll be world famous and loved by many, but your SharePoint farm will be broken, and that's a bad deal.
Yeah, you'll be unemployed, but you'll be famous on Todd's blog.
Yeah, which might help you, you know, get that next job, you never know. But yeah, you want to be careful, because you can't uninstall them. There's just no way to make them go away. So that's, you got to be careful with all that.
All right. Other questions, guys? You're all very quiet this afternoon. If not, I'm going to make up
something
else.
Yeah, so someone mentioned that you do need the enterprise SKU for SQL for TDE, and then he mentioned the worst part about that, he had to get pricing. I don't know if any of you guys have ever coded out SQL Enterprise, but basically you just hold your wallet open and Microsoft takes everything. It's very expensive. You're very proud of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I guess, let's see, what other random thing can you tell me about? Why do you love PowerShell so much? Oh, another question.
Yep, Jim interrupted you. Jim's got a question. Take care of Jim first.
Can you talk about how to integrate Office 365 with a hosted server with someone like Rackspace? How does it look to the end user, and what is involved in doing this? So probably the first thing I would do there, Jim, is kind of talk a little bit more about exactly how Office 365 works, right? With Office 365, in most scenarios, people are talking about Office 365, the shared capacity of Office 365. So really all you're doing there is buying a site collection. Now, you can set the URL. You can, you know, make it all the fancy things you want. You can customize the content with the browser and all that once you get there, which is great and what you probably wanted. But it's kind of often an island by itself. There's not really a lot of ways to take that and say, oh, I want to kind of integrate that 50-50 with, you know, the Rackspace hosted offering, which is somewhere that you would, you know, potentially, depending on which of the Rackspace hosted servers you were going with, or not, I don't know, all the hosted servers, you would have your own environments. You'd have your own central admin, your own SharePoint farm that you could patch as you saw needed, you know, and really kind of care and feeding there. There's not really a lot that jumps out at me at how you would integrate those two environments. They'd be two different URL spaces. They'd have two different looks and feels. Office 365 has some special functionality when it comes to, like, administering the sites and things like that, so that would only show up when you were on the Office 365 side. And then I guess in theory, if you were taking Office 365 and using ADFS to integrate it with authentication against your own internal domain, in theory, you could then set up the Rackspace stuff to ADFS and authenticate against your own internal domain. So you might be able to manage to get the same users and usernames and passwords between the two environments, but even that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, so I think the thing with Office 365 is they have one focus with Office 365. When Microsoft makes any decision about Office 365, they have one thing that governs that governs everything, and that is uptime, performance. Every decision that they make is geared towards that. So anything that might potentially hurt that, you usually can't do or you get a limited thing of. So, you know, you can't get in there and install third-party stuff. You know, there's just a whole lot of limits because they want to make that thing up as much as they can. And so as you're thinking about where you want to host and that, you know, if that's supremely important to you, then that's probably the way to go. But you'll start finding there's a lot of places where that causes you problems, things that you can't do because of the security and because of the uptime. And that's where most of our customers start getting frustrated.
Yeah. But now, at the same time, if you're just looking, you're like, hey, I want to get a SharePoint site, I want some email running, you know, some simple stuff like that, Office 365, if your scenario is very straightforward, Office 365 makes a lot of sense to use. Another place that we've seen Office 365 used is for some companies, they might put their internal SharePoint environment on something like Rackspace or inside their own data center. And then they're like, hey, we got to stand up the extranet. And the extranet, we just need simple collaboration, but we don't want to mess with punching holes in our firewalls and things like that. So sometimes you'll see people who stand up Office 365 for a different scenario, like the extranet. So it's not connected to their internal SharePoint farm at all, and that's actually a good thing because that gives them the security boundary that they'd hoped for.
Yeah. Yep. That is definitely, I mean, it definitely is a security boundary because it's completely out. So that's good. So we got a couple of other questions. You're going to love this one, Shane. So Dwayne,
yeah.
Allman's asking, any good resources, blogs, books, whatever, for SharePoint 2010 and SSRN? I need to get up to speed quickly for a project.
So, Dwayne, the first question I would ask you is, are you talking about deploying the infrastructure side? Is that where your big concerns are now? Or are you talking about things like actually building reports and building out dashboards and things like that once you've gotten the environment? I am going to cheat, and I'm going to assume for the moment that you mean you're having challenges standing up the environment. So the best thing that I can offer you there, and I will share my desktop again. Oh, that is not the button I'm going to press. I will press this button. Let's try this button. All right, so you should see my Internet Explorer window. I am still on Todd's blog. I apologize. What I will recommend is you go out to your favorite search engine. I'm a Bing kind of guy. And you type in SharePoint 2010 Kerberos. And what you will see is that one of these two links will work for you, but what you want is you want to download this Configuring Kerberos Authentication for SharePoint 2010. So you can see that it was just updated last month, and it is a Word document. This might be the greatest Word document that Microsoft has ever produced. it's in the top five. There's no doubt about it. So in this lovely little paper, oh, now I got to share Word with you. Let's see, I'll press this button. Share, not that, this. Todd, do you see my lovely little Word document?
We're a go for the Kerberos white paper.
Yay! So this paper is on revision about 7, I think. But what they do, up here in the top half of the paper, you can get pretty overwhelmed. There's a lot of nerdy detail stuff about how Kerberos works, why it works, where it makes sense, things like that, which I actually really enjoy reading, but I have no life. But that's not nearly as interesting to you, probably, as the idea that then it breaks out into different sections. And so you just asked me about reporting services. So if you go down here, you can see that there's a whole section for setting up SQL reporting services with SharePoint Server 2010. And it's about 30 pages. We'll hit Control. We'll click down there. And so this will actually walk you through all of the steps that are required to get Kerberos running. To get SQL Server reporting services in what we refer to as SharePoint integrated mode running. And so the SharePoint integrated mode is very important. Since SQL Server, I think 98 or 2000, whichever one, they introduced reporting services. We've always had this thing called native mode, where you could just stand up a website, deploy reporting services to it, and you get this clunky, hideous-to-use website for drilling in and categorizing and managing your reports. But once you found the report you're looking for, it was the awesomeness that you created either using the tool called Report Builder or using BIDS, Business Intelligence Development Studio. So two different ways to build very nice-looking reports, but a very clunky interface for your users to get to those reports and manage those. So what Microsoft did a few years back with SharePoint 2007 was they actually introduced the capability to run SQL Server 2008. SQL Server 2008 reporting services could be ran in what was called SharePoint integrated mode. And in that scenario, you would have the ability to work with both SQL Server reporting services, but do it from inside SharePoint. So now instead of managing it through that web interface that SQL used to provision, you would then be able to go into one of your document libraries and manage reporting services from inside one of those, manage it from inside of a document library the way your users have always done. And not only could they use the tools there to find their reports, but they could manage their own subscriptions. That's where they get notified proactively about reports being updated. They could also use the Report Builder tools through the interface, which would do a click once interface that would actually download that client to their machine and open it up and let them build out their own reports. So it's a pretty fabulous experience. The biggest point of confusion, I think, when you start diving into this, and the paper covers it, but I just want to point out, in order to do SQL Server reporting services in SharePoint integrated mode, SQL Server reporting services and SharePoint have to be installed on the same machine. So if you've got a three server farm today, you've got one web front-end server, you've got one application server, and you've got one SQL Server back-end, right now you don't have SQL and SharePoint running on the same box, right? Because on your SQL Server, it's just hosting the databases for SharePoint. It's not actually running the SharePoint bits. So what you'd have to do is go into that environment, and you would have to either install SQL Server reporting services on one of the SharePoint boxes, most typically the application tier, or you'd have to go to the SQL Server box and add SharePoint. I would strongly recommend that you always go and add reporting services to one of your existing SharePoint servers. We don't want to add any extra load to the SQL Server because we know that it causes all of, or it does all the hard work and it's the bottleneck in your farm, so we don't want to add any performance overhead to that environment. Now, one of you have probably already figured out is if you add reporting services to one of the SharePoint boxes, you will need a SQL Server license for the box that you install SQL Server onto the SharePoint box. Now, it can be SQL standard. It's almost always SQL standard. SQL Enterprise doesn't really do anything unless you want to try and make it high availability, which is just crazy. So SQL Server standard will work, but you do have some licensing choices to make there. And I just said a whole bunch, Todd. How did I do?
Not bad. One thing that I would add, and again, this is only so that I can blatantly pimp my own blog, is with SQL 2012 that came out in March, there is a new version of SQL Reporting Services, and instead of installing as like this one-off dealy that it does with SQL 2008 and 2008 R2, if you install SQL 2012, SQL Reporting Services is now just a service app. So you install it like you would any other service application. And then it integrates in your service applications, and it's a much better experience. So you can go that way. And I've got a blog post on that I posted here within the last couple of months that walks through how to install that. All right. So Prenet had another question. Thank you. That he's obviously paying attention and asking a lot of good questions. If I had a gold star, Prenet, I would give it to you. But there's still time, folks. We've got 20 minutes. So he asks, how does a DR farm look in a cloud-hosted environment, or is that a requirement? So that's another one of those cases where, Pranit, the answer is whatever you want it to be, and that comes down to what level of hosting you have. So if you have, like a hosted site collection, then you're going to want to talk to whoever is doing your hosting. Just hypothetically speaking, let's say that you do it with Rackspace. You know, that's one of the things you'll want to talk to your folks about and say, hey, I need this to be highly available, or, you know, I need to know what the backups are like. Because one of the things about DR, disaster recovery, is it's not the same for everybody. Different people have different ideas about what disasters are. So you're better off talking about scenarios than just saying, what do I do about DR? You want to say something about, what do I do if this hosting location goes down? Or what do I do if I delete something and I need to get it back? So if you're, if you've got them maintaining your, you know, the infrastructure for you, and you've got like the Office 365, I'm buying a site collection thing, that's a conversation to have. But if you're doing the infrastructure piece where you're installing it, well, then you need to figure out how you want to handle your DR stuff. And that might be that you get another VM hosted somewhere and you do log shipping or whatever. Again, however you want to handle DR. But it all comes down to, you know, what you want to do, and then just talk to your hosting provider, and I'm sure they'll have some answer that meets your requirements. And I just want to, so in the chat room, Shane's bad-mouthing me because he's got no respect. And Wayne says, you know, that was great for SSRS, and Shane says, lucky for you, I took that question. I'm clearly smarter than Todd. I gave you that question. I took it, and I'm just saying, I'm a giver. I'm compassionate.
You're so kind.
Yep.
So, Colin, I see your question, so get your keyboard ready. I got follow-up questions for you to help you answer that one.
Okay.
So Colin writes, I have a SharePoint farm where the surge service is returning 404s. Uh-oh, now the screen's scrolling. I can't see it. Ah! The surge service is returning 404s, but the pages are available if I view them myself. As far as I can tell, my crawl account has sufficient privileges to see the page. These errors are new, so I don't suspect it's an issue of permissions. Any thoughts? All right, so Colin, my first question is, and this sounds dumb, but are you sure they're 404s? Because 404 typically means it can't find the page. So
yeah.
If you're truly getting 404s, then that is going to probably be an issue with either DNS resolution from the crawl component server, so whichever server in your box is doing, or in, whatever server in your farm is doing the indexing, is having a hard time finding that website. So what you could do is you could just remote desktop into that particular server, open a browser, and type in the URL and see what happens. If you're finding the page, you know, you're getting back a good response, then it's a little odd that SharePoint would get a 404. So the next thing I'd want you to check is if you go into manage service applications and then configure the search service application and take a look at content sources. Potentially somehow your content sources got jacked up. And so if your content log or your content source is pointed at the wrong thing, that could explain it. So typically what I will do there is when you're in the content source, grab that URL, just copy it out and paste it into a browser on that same server and see what it does. That could potentially be one of your issues. Another one that could possibly somehow figure into this is if you're doing if your alternate access mappings were also out of whack. I really can't explain why that would be the case, but if your alternate access mapping was wrong, that would be the thing. So I see you put out there that you said, yes, it is a 404. I should just read the words on the screen and quit guessing. That was very mean of you. No, I'm just kidding. But no, you said it does work as your account. So, Colin, what happens if you change the crawl account to be your own account? Does that magically start working? I mean, I can see scenarios where this is a 401 error. If you were giving 401s, I have all kinds of great guidance. But 404 just means, hey, I can't find this typically. I don't know. Todd,
yeah, so you and I are thinking along the same line. So, Colin, when you look in your crawl log, are you seeing top-level errors or are you just seeing errors? So along the same lines as Shane, one of the things that I do to every SharePoint server in the world that I ever touch as I point it to itself for every SharePoint address. So if you're, you know, if you're crawling, you know, portal.contoso.com, on every SharePoint server, I've got an entry in the host file that says 127.001.portal.contoso.com. There's a whole bunch of benefits to that. Discovered a new one yesterday, as a matter of fact. But one of the things that it does is for search, I know that search is going to the local box. So I know that it's not trying to go out to a load balancer or an external IP or something. And then, like Shane said, I'll log on to that box and log into SharePoint as my content crawl account and see what happens, because it should be the same experience. Because when search does its crawls, it does just do it over HTTP like a browser. So now Colin is saying maybe it's a two-server farm. Maybe the requests are going to the wrong place. Good idea. And Shane was also right. You always want to crawl the default zone URL for your web app. He mentioned the alternate access mappings thing. So go into your content sources and look at all those URLs and make sure that they are the default zone URL for the web app. Because search gets kind of goofy if you try to crawl the non-default zone. So I've had people break search by changing the default zone URL, because there's other things that depend on that. So they'll change the default zone URL to be a fully qualified domain name for something, and then search breaks. So there's a bunch of that.
Yeah, and to the first question that Todd answered, or asked, not answered, he doesn't answer me. But so here,
I really don't.
I'm in the search service application, and here's the crawl log. So I guess the other thing that we could ask for clarity is, are you seeing 404 errors as top-level errors? Right, so top-level errors are really bad news, because that means that probably the whole web app is not working. Those are bad. On the other hand, if you're just getting random 404s as errors on... So Colin says, hey, he's not getting top-level errors, he's just getting random errors in here. A certain amount of errors is normal, is really what I'm going to tell you as a guy who's done search for years and written a whole book on search. If you're getting less than 1% errors, I tell people to ignore. You're never going to get this to zero. I mean, in theory, if you spent like 1,000 hours on it, and you might be able to, but if you have any amount of content, you're always going to have some errors. And as long as the number of errors is less than 1%, I completely ignore them. It becomes this cat and mouse game, right? Because what will happen is you'll crawl, you get an error about, oh, I couldn't find this Excel workbook. Well, so then we do an IIS reset, we do an SP search, or sorry, an OSearch 14 reset, and then, we rerun the crawl, and all of a sudden, you know, now that document's found, but we have a different error. So take, you know, the number here, and so I see you say that you've got 3,000 plus, Colin. How many successes do you have, though? Are you in my 1% threshold?
Yeah, so another thing is, have you installed any, like, new iFilters or anything? Because the crawling, the indexing and crawling process is probably one of the most intense things that you can put your servers through. And if you do have everything pointing to 127.001, you've got one box that's fielding every piece of that. And so you can get to this case, like what Shane was saying, you know, you can do this cat and mouse thing where you can try to figure out where the thing is, but it ends up being a lot of times just resources.
So, Colin, one last question, and I'll quit peppering you. What was I going to ask? I forgot that fast. Oh, have you rebooted the whole farm? Because sometimes OSearch 14 just kind of freaks out. And so doing like a net space stop space OSearch 14 restarts the search infrastructure pieces. So that's the manual way of doing it. And that's preferred. Like, so you're saying you haven't rebooted, so I'm not really encouraging you to reboot. That's not required. You can go to a command prompt and run this command, OSearch.
I was just going to type it for you.
Oh, I thought you said you didn't know how to type.
I can't read. I didn't say I can't type.
Oh, sorry. And so the net stop OSearch 14, that'll stop all the search stuff. And then if you will then follow that right back up with a Nets start Osurge 14 like Todd just put out there. Yep, Todd just gave you that. That might fix it. So, all right. So let's quit picking on Colin. I think we had a couple others sneak in, maybe. Maybe I'm crazy.
So Pranit had a follow-up one. So we were talking about the whole DR stuff and all that, and buying site collections. And he says, how does the charge go on the cloud per hosted site? I don't know how, like, Office 365 does it. Again, I'm kind of bad at all this stuff. But I know that with Rackspace, is you get, like, a base site collection for some amount of money. I don't know what it is. But then there are add-ons to it. So if you need more storage, you know, you get however much for, you know, included, and then every gig after that's, you know, however much a month, things like that. The backup stuff, the DR stuff, I know is another add-on. So I would have to make up numbers to tell you what that is, but everybody's got it. Everybody that does hosting. So if you just ask them, they'll know what that is.
Right, we're about to run out of time here. People are leaving us to go to their next meetings. Any other quick questions here at the end, folks?
Any?
I like how I say folks. That makes everyone feel really welcome and warm.
Oh, I feel great. I feel great. So one of the things before we run out of time, I want to make sure that Shane and I get to promote ourselves as much as possible. We are both presenting at Tech Ed North America in Orlando, and that's like a month from right now or close to it. That's like June something to June something. That's the second
day we present.
There we go. So exactly a month from now, you could be lucky. That's going to be in Orlando. We'll be there. I will be at Tech Ed Europe in Amsterdam 2 weeks after that. Shane and I will both be at SP TechCon in Boston in July. And then in November, hopefully, there's the big SharePoint conference in Las Vegas in Mandalay Bay. Hopefully Shane and I will be allowed in the doors for that. So you'll be able to come heckle us, you know, throw rubber chickens at us, whatever you want in person. I've got my blog, toddclint.com. I'm on Twitter, at Todd Clint. Also, every Monday night, I do a little SharePoint netcast pod show sort of thing. I do it live at 8:30 Central, and then I put it up on my blog, the recordings. And it's this kind of stuff. I've got prepared stuff from the week, and people ask questions, and I make fun of them, and it's a good time.
Todd, you just got propositioned to do some stuff in Tampa. I don't know how you feel about that one.
Wayne, I thought you were leaving. I thought we were pretending you were gone. Okay. So Darcy asks, can you offer up any resources for adding custom fields to the user profile service and making them searchable? So adding custom fields depends on exactly what you're trying to do. You can go into the property settings for the user profile service and just create new properties. There's a bunch of them in there. And then if you want to map them back and forth to AB, that's another step on top of that. And then when it comes to making them searchable, you do have to take a step to make them searchable. I don't remember what it is. So if Shane can't find it or somebody else doesn't know what it is, if you shoot me an email, Darcy, I will get you that answer. But, yeah, you do need to take a step to
so
make that
searchable. So hopefully they can see my screen here. So I'm in Managed Service Applications and then User Profiles. And then if we manage user properties.
So after you answer this question, I've got a hysterical story about this. And hysterical
awesome.
Story.
All right, so let's see if I know name is searchable. So let's say edit on name. So each of these are where you could add your own properties, like Todd was just mentioning. Use the new property here, then map it to stuff in AD. But if you roll down the page here, search settings, indexed.
There we go. Yep. That was it. I couldn't remember if it was there or where it was, but yep, that's it.
Oh,
so then when you
perfect.
Do people searches. So that page that Shane's on right now is the same page that you go to if you want to set import or export of these fields up back and forth to AD. And yesterday I was talking to a customer, and they had done that, and they wanted to replicate the assistant field from SharePoint back to AD. Like, you know, good SharePoint admins, they were doing it all in a test environment. And their SharePoint was in a test environment, but it was against their production AD. And they were just kind of playing around, so they just mapped assistant to assistant in AD, told it to export from SharePoint to AD, had the permissions right, and it worked. So a couple of folks in IT thought it'd be real funny, and they were putting like people above them as their assistant and all that kind of stuff. What they didn't realize was that with Exchange, when you set that assistant field, it sets your assistant as an alternate recipient to your mailbox. So as these people were hysterically putting other people in as their assistants, then those people started receiving all of the first people's email for an unknown reason, just started showing up. And so, you know, a couple of people in IT did it, and then they told some of their friends. And so before it was done, there were just a bunch of these people in this test environment that were doing this and then getting other people's email. And so be very careful with these settings.
Awkward.
Yeah. So be very careful with all that. So I think we're out of time. So thanks, everybody. Shane and I would do this every morning from 9 to 10 if there was an audience for it. So if you like this, let the folks at Rackspace know, let us know, and we will do this as many times as people will have us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And we're going to turn it back over to the boss lady so she can actually give you helpful information like the banter that Todd and I gave you.
Thanks, everybody, for attending today. I just wanted to remind you that there will be an archive link to the session today that will be emailed to you, whichever email you use to register. So look for that in the next day or so. It will also be shared on Facebook. In case you're not a Facebook fan, you might want to check that out because we have some other great SharePoint resources on there. And then if we didn't get a chance to answer your question this week, we are going to be doing this on a regular basis. So every single week, Tuesdays from 2 to 3 Central, feel free to jump on anytime within that hour. We will have various experts jumping on here and there. While I would love to tell you it's going to be Shane and Todd every week, we are rotating, so you'll have to catch them on their blog or, well, I know, but we have to be fair and share. So we'll have some other experts on, and maybe if you're lucky, you'll have a chance to meet with them at one of the many events that they are speaking at or presenting at over the next couple weeks. So look forward to seeing you all next week. And if you have any other questions, feel free to contact either of them on Twitter or through their blog or on email. See you next time.